Despite neither Tynwald nor the public knowing why royal assent wasn't granted to the assisted dying bill, amendments were moved which, according to the Attorney General, were all that's needed to get the green light from the UK. We'll hear later from Alex Allenson, but first, Rob Collister, who wasn't happy with the bill.
Well, you have to remember that the branches have already gone through the assisted dying process. The bill was approved, it just didn't get royal assent. Yes, I was critical of the legislation, the draft legislation originally, going all the way back to 23, and that is because I felt those areas that need to be strengthened. And a lot of those strengths, unfortunately, appear in the regulations or the secondary legislation. And that, to me, has been the problem. We haven't seen the full picture, and the public continues not to see the full picture. So the bill has gone through. We now working through these amendments that the UK Justice Department want to see, and I think it's absolutely right that they're supported today. But then later on, I think we need to seriously look at what the regulations say. How does this bill work in practice, and how much does it cost? What safeguards are in place? Do we have the medical professionals on board? But more importantly, do we have the public on board? Because passing a piece of legislation, in many ways, is the simple part. The hard part is the regulations. And I personally would be more the supportive of a secondary public consultation once we know all the facts.
But you know that attempts to try and get a referendum in relation to this, to try and get the public involvement in terms of decisions as to whether we go ahead with this or not, failed in the Keys. And that was when we were considering it, this as primary legislation. Secondary legislation gets far less consideration generally. Why do you imagine that those in favour of this principle would suddenly decide, yeah, actually, you know what, we should go out to the public and we should find out what the public think?
I don't think we should go back for a referendum. I think they're quite complex and difficult, but I would actually hold a second public consultation once we actually understand how this bill could be rolled out on an operational level, you know, within the Department of Health and Social Care, because that's who's going to have to lead this once royal assent is given. It's going to take years. It's not going to be done, you know, possibly even in the next administration. It could take several years for the Isle of Man to actually have assisted dying legislation. Let's be very clear on that point. But for me personally, I think once we know the costs of how much this will cost to provide the service, then we understand if we have the medical professionals on board, and then more importantly, how does this work? How do the safeguards around this bill actually work? I think it should go out to public consultation, and maybe the next administration or even the administration after that should maybe consider having a public threshold of say 60%, but actually restrict the public consultation to make sure it is Isle of Man views only. We're not interested what England is doing. They've got their own piece of legislation. Let's not be lobbied by massive UK groups in this. Let's have an Isle of Man piece of legislation based on decisions made by the people of the Isle of Man.
Are you content that you have seen all the information from the Privy Council in relation to their they don't call it necessarily a rejection, but their request for the bill to be amended. Have you seen everything, and why has the public not been allowed to see all this information and advice?
Well, I can clearly put on the record that I've probably seen only what the public's seen. You know, I've not seen anything extra. I'm not the mover of this bill. I'm not in the Council of Ministers. I'm not in the Department of Health and Social Care. So I have not seen any additional information, very little, in fact. So for me, I'm also navigating my way through this. What I did look at when I saw the amendments coming through, I think the one where the court will play a role, that was something I absolutely was in favour of. I wanted the Isle of Man courts to be involved. I wanted that extra oversight. As you mentioned, I did get approval from the House of Keys to set up a committee that looked at every single one of these 14 clauses. It is hard to look at them in isolation when you haven't got the secondary legislation next to it to see how that clause would work in practice. And that's what's complicated about this. So people are seeing this and say, well, it's only 14 clauses. It's significantly less than what they have in the UK and what they have in Jersey. But a lot of ours would be in secondary legislation. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned here, Phil, that what we do when we have something as complex as this, we actually followed what the Jersey and the Channel Islands did, and they spent many years in advance putting together the primary legislation and the secondary legislation. They also set up a citizens' jury. All of these points I made at the outset when leave was granted in the House of Keys, that we should have followed Jersey and had all of this work done in advance, so when we did go to the public would have all of the facts to make a proper decision based on all the information. And we haven't done that. And that's a criticism of the mover of the bill, because I think he wanted to speed this through to get, you know, the Isle of Man to pass the legislation first. That was a mistake. In the future, when we have something as complex as this, let's look and see how we do this properly and in the right order.
That was Onkin MHK Rob Collister. Next, Chris Thomas, who felt the Tynwald process for fixing the bill wasn't ideal.
So the procedure we're using today in Tynwald has been used twice before in my time in the House of Keys, and both those times it was for technical amendments. Today it's for much more than that. I tried to move unsuccessfully on the 5th of May in House of Keys to do it again inside the House of Keys, because there's a standing order that could have been used to take into account comments from Whitehall, Westminster into our process. Lost there, so today I made the speech, that the fingers crossed speech I called it, where there are people who've got faith in this bill, and the fact that this time we'll get royal assent because we're compliant with the Human Rights Convention. But I had to point out that at least three times previously we'd had faith that we were going to get royal assent and we didn't. I also talked about the fact that I used the word fame as one of my F words, as I called them, and you know, currently we're famous because we've got the bill through first in the British Islands, but we could easily become infamous if we don't respect ourselves in the House of Keys, and we don't respect ourselves in the Legislative Council, and even in the Isle of Man, to make legislation properly rather than just to be famous.
Putting the side, and I'm sure Alex Anderson will do this himself, but putting his side, what he would say is that the branches, Keys and Legco, have debated the principles of this very, very extensively. And you know, if the principles are agreed and all he is doing is responding to concern that the UK has in relation to whether safeguards should be in secondary or primary legislation, you know, surely this is just a technical issue and a relatively straightforward matter.
Oh, well, no, the House of Keys and the Legislative Council haven't passed principles, they've passed legislation, and they're now changing the legislation that they see that they've passed. Dr. Allinson's told us that he hasn't spoken directly to the Ministry of Justice. I've challenged the Attorney General this afternoon, we're making this interview at lunchtime, to explain whether he believes that this new bill will meet the requirements of the Ministry of Justice to be able to recommend it for royal assent. The other massive issue that I've raised with Dr. Allinson, and I hope he addresses this afternoon, is about what the assisted dying regime in the Isle of Man will look like and when we will have an assisted dying regime. He's told us it's several years away, and I want to see whether he says that in public on the floor of Tynwald this afternoon, because in essence we've still got to deal with the suicide law in England and Wales. We've still got to work out how we regulate the pharmacists and the nurses and the doctors and all the other allied professionals that are involved. We've still got to work out how we get the approved substance available, tested and thing. We've also got to work out whether it's delivered by Manx Care or whether it's delivered outside Manx Care. We've still got to secure our hospice with adequate financing. There's lots of practical issues, and our bill is behind that in Jersey, and even the Westminster bill that hasn't got through Westminster as yet, because it doesn't actually specify how and by whom and with what money assisted dying service is going to be provided. And I hope today Dr. Allison rises to the challenge I set him and explains very clearly what his vision is for the assisted dying service in the Isle of Man.
Should people in the Isle of Man have the right to decide how they want to end their lives?
Of course they should. I've always been a firm believer in assisted living and assisted dying. It's a gradation, it's a spectrum of possibilities how things come to an end. We've got to make sure that this is seen alongside dealing with terminal illness in the proper way. Of course they should, but it's incredibly complex, and it's naive to think that people in here can answer all of the questions just with our own resources when people around the rest of the world, including in the British Isles, have been struggling with this. We're not brighter than the average MP. We're not better in our civil service than the British civil service. We haven't got access to our own regulations in this area. We've got to work inside frameworks that are international. It's a huge challenge that that Dr. Allen set himself. Fair play to him. Looks like he's going to be successful. But let's see. That's why I called it the fingers crossed debate.
Should the decision makers in this process see in absolute detail what has been suggested to, I presume, the Attorney General's chambers? I don't know who else has seen this. But should they not see that advice so that you can understand what kind of amendments are necessary?
So Dr. Allenson's position is, I haven't seen it. There is a press release that the Chief Minister issued about what was in it. The Chief Minister has seen it. And then back in 5th of May in the House of Keys, Dr. Allenson referred to conversations that he'd heard about between members of the AG's chambers here and officers in the Ministry of Justice. So I've asked the Attorney General to say whether this set of amendments will satisfy the Ministry of Justice and the Privy Council and then the Lord Chancellor, or whether there are, it may not, and secondly whether there are other sets of amendments that could also satisfy it, because I've worked with a couple of others on amendments and we were struggling to persuade the Attorney General that it was really worth drafting our amendments, because, you know, he decided, as far as we could tell, that these were a satisfactory set of amendments, and that's what we're trying to do now. We're just trying to get this bill to have royal assent, but that doesn't mean we've got an assisted dying service in the Isle of Man.
I mean, is there a constitutional position here, or question to be asked at least? Surely if the UK government is effectively interfering with the democratic process in the Isle of Man, then you at least as legislators have the right to see why they're interfering with what you've passed.
There is that constitutional dimension, and I warned right at the beginning of this bill that would be cited at this stage by some of the supporters of it. But, you know, we choose to have the Crown involved in securing good governance, foreign relations, and so therefore the Isle of Man having a bill that puts us in breach of the European Convention is a problem for the UK, not for us, because it would be the case of somebody in the Isle of Man versus the UK at the European Court. So, you know, fair play if you take the view that we ought to be able to do whatever we want, even if it's dangerous and daft. So be it, but I don't do daft and dangerous. I want to do sensible and proper, and that's why I've been sticking out for a proper process, which should, in actual fact, be in the House of Keys and discussing these amendments properly. But I do think this afternoon it'll go ahead and it'll be taken on, and we'll see where the royal assent goes. And the last point I'd make is, fingers crossed, but I do suspect that Jersey will get royal assent to their legislation first, because their legislation is better than ours, sadly, because government did it.
That was Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas. Next, mover and instigator of the bill, Alex Allenson.
Do you actually know why these amendments were necessary?
Well, yeah, and to correct you, it's not my assisted dying bill anymore. It's Tynwald's assisted dying bill, because it was approved by Tynwald over a year ago. And I think it's a bit frustrating, and that was vocalised by a couple of people who spoke, including the Lord Bishop, that we've had to go this length of time until we know that, one, the Ministry of Justice weren't prepared to give royal assent at this time, and two, what their reservations were. And their reservations really revolved around not what was in the bill, but possibly what wasn't in the bill, and a judgment by the European Court of Human Rights, and therefore they wanted us to try to put some of the safeguards that were going to be put in anyway later on in the face of the bill, which is what these amendments have done. So it is responding to the court's interpretation of the way assisted dying interacts with the European Convention on Human Rights, and having those safeguards there, because I think the Ministry of Justice were concerned that the safeguards weren't there, then they might have to represent us in the European Court if somebody brought a legal challenge to it, and so they wanted to try to prevent that.
And they do sort of have a point that something as important as this, I mean, we are talking matters of life and death, aren't we? Maybe relying on secondary legislation, which is relatively easy to change, rather than primary legislation, which is much more difficult, maybe isn't the best of things when it comes to safeguards in terms of whether people have got the right sort of advice and aren't going to be pressurised into potentially agreeing to take their lives.
Well, again, people have talked about this being a matter of life and death. It's a matter for people who are dying, who have terminal illness, to have the choice and dignity to control how and where they die. So I think it is important to remember that. I think you are right in that the primary legislation gets a lot of scrutiny, but we've seen, particularly in this administration, a huge amount of secondary legislation coming through from bills that were passed quite a long time ago, such as secondary legislation about sexual offences, about domestic violence, domestic abuse. Got a huge amount that still needs to come through in terms of capacity, and the Assist the Dying Bill cannot even begin to start until we get our capacity legislation right. So there are a lot of steps that still need to be done. The way we try to do primary and secondary legislation, I think, does need to be looked at again and make sure. And that's been something that has been talked about during this administration. But similarly, in terms of Assist the Dying, because it is a private member's bill, part of it was to make absolutely certain we had the further consultation in terms of some of the codes of practice, some of the secondary legislation that needs to come forward with this, and really that would need a much wider audience for that. So I'm hopeful that now that we've got the amendments, that I am fairly confident that will satisfy the Ministry of Justice, we can go on to get Royal Assent and then do quite a lot of the background work that needs to be done to put this into actual practice.
And does Royal Assent have to be achieved prior to the dissolution of the House of Keys prior to the election?
I don't know how long David Lammy will take to look at our bill again and hopefully consider it for Royal Assent, given everything else that's going on in the UK at the moment. They are rather busy. I am keen that we, as Tim will sign the bill, so we lock it in so that it will withstand any further delays that may happen, so that the next administration can then look at implementing this rather than having to start from scratch all over again, because we've already spent a huge amount of time on this. I appreciate the scrutiny and all the work that's been done with this, but I think it is really important that we now move on and look at some of the more detailed implementation and look at what the UK are doing as well with their own bill coming back into Westminster.
I mean, obviously David Lammy and others in his area have to be sure that they are able to defend a piece of legislation that comes in their direction. How is it that our legal advice seems to have said, yes, the bill is human rights compliant, but theirs doesn't? I mean, obviously, depends on how much you pay as to what legal advice you get. But surely something as important as this, we should be getting the correct advice.
I think we have had the correct advice. I think the Attorney General is quite clear that actually our bill is human rights compliant. What the Ministry of Justice have said is that, well, yes, it is. However, just to make absolutely certain, it perhaps couldn't be challenged in the European Court in the same way as Belgium was challenged, we would like you to put some extra parts into the bill. And so it's that extra security, extra safeguards on the face of the bill that they wanted, given what had happened previously with another jurisdiction. And I have to absolutely respect that point of view. So no, I don't think that our Attorney General's office or myself or the draft has got things wrong. I think another set of legal eyes have looked at this and thought, well, actually, we need to improve the bill. Again, if you get three lawyers in a room, you'll possibly get three different legal opinions. All of them are valid. And the art of good lawmaking is to take all of them into consideration.
It does seem to me a little odd that our democratically elected House of Keys and the Parliament generally sitting as Tynwald is being asked to approve these amendments to the bill without understanding what the advice is that says the bill isn't currently in a form that can be given Royal Assent. Is it just me?
No, it isn't. I mean, what has happened is the Ministry of Justice have looked at this case, Mortier versus Belgium, have looked at the rulings and said, well, actually, you need to bear this into consideration with your own bill. So I've gone through the ruling in detail. So have the members of the Attorney General's office. And we've managed to sculpt some amendments that will meet every single detail that was flagged up. And that's now been added to the bill. And hopefully that bill can be sent off back to the Ministry of Justice for royal assent.
So Dr. McCall has, as I understand it, with the support of many other doctors, taken legal advice, and the legal advice in which he has taken is that he still thinks, even with these amendments, that there is a reasonable challenge that can be made under human rights legislation in relation to this bill. Is he right?
Again, with the European Convention, it is very subject to interpretation. We had exactly the same situation when we were reforming our abortion law, and various people were threatening that they would take us to court if we passed our legislation because it wasn't human rights compliant. Actually, it was, and it has been, and it's been robust, and it hasn't been challenged. And actually, we have some of the best abortion laws in the British Isles, certainly, if not Western Europe, and which have been incredibly successful in terms of providing choice for women. Now, what we're trying to do with assisted dying is similar. We're dealing with a huge number of countries throughout Europe and jurisdictions around the world who have assisted dying. Some have had it for decades. And what we're trying to do is copy best practice and provide the best way we can provide the services to the people of the Isle of Man. Now, with any of these laws, they can be subject to challenge by people who employ lawyers, and we've seen that before. And in the United Kingdom, various pressure groups are even now threatening to take the UK government to court if they pass the law. In terms of the European Court, to take a case, you have to be hard done by the law, and you have to exhaust what's happening locally in terms of local resolution before you can take it to the European Court. Now, we haven't even got a law enacted yet, so I think it's far too early for people to start threatening our Parliament with legal action.
Even if this bill receives royal assent, that's not the end of the story, is it? I mean, the secondary legislation is required, and we've got to be able to rely upon the newly elected House of Keys, which undoubtedly will have different faces in, because you've announced that you're not standing. So there will be new faces, and the new House of Keys might well decide, okay, we've got this law passed, but it's too complicated and we're not going to go any further with it.
So you're quite right, this isn't the end of the story. This is hopefully the ending of one chapter and the start of a new one, which will be about the detailed consultation consideration for implementation of this. Now, I also agree with you that with a new parliament, a new Timwald, there may be different ideas. However, I also am very keen that people on the Isle of Man who overwhelmingly support the principles of assisted dying make this a bit of an election issue. They ask the candidates who they're going to vote for, are you in favour of the assisted dying being implemented? Are you in favour of the amount of time and effort that's been spent by the previous administration actually having the right impact and outcomes for the people of the Isle of Man, including me, if I want it? What do you think about this? And I think it's absolutely right that this is asked of all candidates and that they give a considered answer.
One of your constant critics through the passage of this bill through the House of Keys has been Chris Thomas, and I asked him outright. I said, look, do you agree that people in the Isle of Man should have the right to decide how ultimately they die? And he said, yes, I agree with the principle that they should have that right. It's just I'm concerned that the bill, a 14 clause bill, private members bill, not a government bill, is still flawed even after these amendments.
So there are members who have consistently opposed the bill right from the start. Chris Thomas is one of them, the Chief Minister is another, and I respect their opposition. What I would say is that since this debate was started by John Remington over 20 years ago, it has always been up to private members to bring this legislation forward. It has never been on any government agenda, government plan at all. And similarly, in the United Kingdom, it has always been seen as a matter of conscience that should be decided by Parliament rather than government. And so that's why I've brought it. So I respect people's opposition. I respect people's reservations about this. But at the same time, I was honoured in 2016 to be elected to Parliament. And so this has always been very much a parliamentary matter. And I'm very proud of our Parliament that we've managed to get another step closer to providing what Timbald petitioners have been calling for successively for the last 20 years.
That was Ramsay MHK Alex Allinson. Finally, Dr. Graham McCall, who has led opposition to the bill.
We think that the amendments that have been drafted have many loopholes and are not consistent. If I can give you an example, so two doctors will assess the patient, an assessing doctor and an independent doctor. And if one of them has doubts about the capacity of the patient, they can refer to a psychiatrist or an expert in capacity. Anyway, the psychiatrist then will presumably examine the patient and decide perhaps they don't have capacity and can express those concerns to the independent doctor. But the independent doctor can completely ignore those concerns. And the independent doctor is under no obligation to even say to the other doctor that he had doubts or she had doubts and referred to the psychiatrist. So we have a strange situation here where there is no compulsion on openness between those three professionals. So this is very strange and would be worrying. So that's an example of a loophole in the legislation which isn't on the face of the bill.
That was Dr. Graham McCall. So what do you think? Are you reassured that more safeguards will now be in the bill rather than in easily changed secondary legislation? Are you relieved that the Isle of Man is a step closer to legalising assisted dying? Or are you worried about the prospect? There's a full list of all candidates so far declared for September's House of Keys election on Manx Radio's website. Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting philgorn@manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget this programme is available as a podcast. I'm Phil Gorn. Go to myosungeistachrom. Thanks for listening.